Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 327. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Graham Thickens.
Hey, that's mellow.
Isn't it? And Phil Wilson.
And I got a much better connection this week, I want to say.
Yes, you sound just awesome.
Yeah.
And our buddy Tim Elliott is singing the blues somewhere, I guess. I don't know where he is. No, he's camping.
I didn't get to respond to my intro. Hi.
Sorry, Phil.
We stepped all over that.
Stepped all over me. Jeez.
Oh, man.
That's okay. That's all right. I'll get over it.
Yeah. Well, now we're going to have to go to the Minnesota Cup Awards event at the Alumni Center because they've been announced, and there are a couple of hot ones.
I thought maybe we'd won something. I'm sorry.
We did not.
That's why we had to go.
Well, there's a couple of hot ones in each category, actually, I should say. But in the high-tech division, that iPad connected to Mac tablet app, Astro HQ, they won. And Kipsu.
Mm-hmm. And I'm familiar with the name Kipsu. I'm not exactly... Graham, what do? You know?
Well, they're in the hospitality space, and... what does it have to do with? I'm blanking now, but our friend Justin Porter, who had been at the U for many years in their what do they call it? Venture Center,
right?
Up and joined Kipsu just less than a year ago, and surprised me. But he was filling me in a little bit about what it's about. But I think we'll have to like click through and read about it here because I'm forgetting exactly what they do in hospitality.
Kipsu uses real-time digital communication channels such as SMS, internet chat, and social messaging to keep you connected more deeply with your guest.
Well, if you remember, Tim talked a little bit about this, that this was really, you know, where you can send a text message, for example, that you need, you know, your toilets plugged in your hotel room or whatever. Or if you're complaining about, you know, service that you got at the Marriott Courtyard in Chicago, you know, can weigh in.
Is this what Joseph Reuter was doing? He was doing a project like that, I know, with Mall of America for a long time. Is he involved in Kipsu?
I don't think he is. He's out in front on a lot of things, that guy.
Yeah,
He is.
He is for sure.
He is.
Well, congratulations to them. Also, Restro HQ. Restro?
Yeah, right.
But there we talked about them, I believe it was last week, wasn't it? We were talking about that.
We did
talk about them. I didn't realize they had it's a San Francisco / Minneapolis company,
right?
And they're former Apple employees, developers, Apple engineers.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. What's interesting too is on the Minnesota, and we'll put a link in the show notes for everyone listening, but on the Minnesota Cup division winners, they do call out whether it's, or that it is a woman led team. And that's interesting because both of the student category winners were women-led teams. Same with social entrepreneur. One of the winners in the general category was a woman-led team. So, that's pretty great. You know, we all always talk about...
I think that's wonderful, yeah.
Yeah, we always talk about all the things that are happening to get more and more women and young girls involved in technology and specifically in entrepreneurship. And here we go. It's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so it'll be a big event on Wednesday the 10th, or 9th, I should say.
At the McNamara Alumni Center?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep. And then the idea is the overall winner who gets $50,000 will be named that night. So that's the big build-up.
Oh, that's cool. Right. Yeah, I forgot about that. That's the punchline to the whole thing.
Right. Yeah. And you know, they get 500-600 people out to that event, I think, every year. So yeah, I guess we'll have to be there. And then we'll pop over to the VidCoo open house after that.
That's right. The elusive VidCoo open house. It just keeps moving.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It's a moving target.
It's a moving target.
I've never seen an event rescheduled so many times as that one. But
and
we're going to
hope
that they actually pull it off this time.
I was actually in front of their offices for one of them and realized, oh, this has been changed. Okay, so moving on.
How funny. Yep.
They're in the same building as Lead Pages, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, I didn't put anything in here about this, but I don't know if you guys have heard, but there's a commercial plugin called Bloom that's made by Elegant Themes, and it does these popovers. So, you know, when you scroll down and does a popover, and they've got all kinds of really great themes and technologies for this plugin. And turns out our pals at Lead Pages essentially took that, made some modifications to it. And because it's under the GPL, the GNU Public License, that you can do that, right? You can fork an open source technology and build your own. So they made some modifications and they posted it to the WordPress plugin repository, and it got approved and got posted. And there was just an enormous amount of backlash.
So
it turns out people were saying, you know, at the end of the day, yeah, legally it's okay, but it was a bit of a dick move to just take somebody's for-profit plugin and that they're trying to, you know, sell commercially and just fork it and then throw it out there for free. What was interesting is the answer is, yeah, that kind of makes sense. But Elegant Themes was making it part of their overall, you know, $89 subscription fee, where you get all their themes and so on and so forth. But boy, has this brought up a lot of controversy. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens with this whole ecosystem that has come up around WordPress, where more and more plugins are going commercial, but also not only do you buy them, but you buy a year worth of subscription. And after that, you can't update it anymore. So there's all of this lock-in going on. And that may have been, I don't know, I'm going to try to find out, that may have been Lead Pages, you know, hidden agenda as well, is the fact that, you know, they're a SaaS service, and that's what you buy, and you don't buy the plugin and the subscription to the plugin. So it's going to be interesting to see how this controversy kind of plays out. I wish Tim was on, because I'm sure he knows about this.
Well, I smell a blog post coming from Clay Collins on this one.
Well, he did do one. There is a post where he lays out
since the controversy.
Yep. And I'll put links in the show notes.
Yeah.
But the plugin was called Rapidology, and they took it off. It's now down. Clay Collins posted on Medium. He said, why, you know, the name of the post was Why I Believe in Rapidology and the Spirit of the GPL. And he wrote this thing 3 days ago. And anyway, I'll put a link in the show notes to it. A little bit about what's going on. So that was a kind of a big deal. I know. Well, and so then our pals at Best Buy, remember how I had said how cool this watch band was that I got this, and I put it in my ccool thing last week, my Apple watch band. And then surprisingly, it still wasn't available for general purchase, but Best Buy had it on the floor. Well, Fortune Magazine just came out with an article entitled Best Buy Deepens Links to Apple Says Watch Has Been a Smash Hit. And it's all about Hubert Joly.
Joly
is off to a... Don't be teasing the French. Come on, Phil. Come on.
I wasn't teasing. I was just saying, Hubert Joly.
Some of my best friends know where France is. Anyway, so
I had a French fry once.
You had a what?
I ate French fries once.
There you go.
Support.
I thought maybe he said I had a French woman once.
That's kind of what I thought he said. I was going to go, Graham, come on, that's a little inappropriate. Wow. Anyway, but Joly told Wall Street analysts on a conference call that the demand has been really strong in the stores and online. And so it's really interesting. They're going to have watches in 300 stores by the holiday season. So.
Yeah, what's fascinating about this is you know, nobody can get Apple to talk much about numbers, but here's Best Buy coming out and happily telling how everyone how well it's doing. And so, you know, that gets around Apple having to violate its privacy, you know, kind of policies of not talking about numbers. And now the numbers are coming out. So
right.
it sounds good for the watch.
It does. It does. Well, and then in another development, again, I wish Tim was on because his interactions with Comcast on the Twin Cities region. But but we were invited to come over to see Comcast's data center. They had released this week a press release on increasing the internet speeds for Twin Cities customers. And so they basically, in some of the cases, they did it in three tiers for the consumer, not for business like me. So I'm still limping along at 75 megabits per second.
Oh, shut up. Oh, 30, dude.
Down Jeez and 15 geez. Up. Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway. So
yeah,
the
you're suffering so much.
So the performance tier, which was 25 megabits per second, is now doubled to 50. And their blast was to 105 from 50. And then they have this extreme 105, which went up to 150 megabits per second. So speeds are definitely increasing. Well, I got to tell you what. So I go into this data center, and I've been in a lot of data centers. Well, you guys have too. I mean, you know, we've done the Visi tour and other data centers and so forth. Well, what's really struck me, and I wrote a
always
post.
A thrilling tour. Always a thrilling tour, by the way.
Well,
always a thrilling tour,
yes.
By the way.
I know, but for some of us, I really goofed on it. But anyway, what really struck me was the fact that everything is getting so incredibly small that a lot of the racks, you know, were about 50% full, if that, because the size of the components have dropped so quickly. And then the DOCSIS 3.1 is coming out. And they kind of alluded to some things that they, you know, kind of off the record things about what's happening. But DOCSIS 3.1 is going to support 10 gigabits per second downstream and up to a gig per second upstream. And so they may very well pull a rabbit out of a hat if they see things happening with fiber. But I was overall very impressed. And
so, I read where as of Thursday, all you had to do was reboot your modem and you'd see double.
Yep.
Your speed.
If you're on one of these tiers, so you have to be on one of those three tiers. But if you are, then essentially it's doubling.
Yeah. But you know what the problem is? I am on one of those tiers and it didn't double for me. So what I'm thinking is it because I have a Motorola modem of my own and not their modem? And maybe I have to call them up and go through, you know.
Yeah, you may have to give a call just to ask about it, but I don't think that's
the case. But yeah, I can, we'll talk after the show and I'll find out what model you've got and so on. And we'll figure that out. But the speeds are there and they did not really have much to say about the data caps because, you know, clearly if the data cap, like it used to be 300 gigabytes, you know, if the data cap is there, but they're now selling services that are, you know, 105 megabit per second for a 50 meg tier, you're going to fill up that cap pretty quickly. And so I don't know if caps are just going to be gone. I mean, because they're delivering, you know, they're streaming and they're delivering all their stuff this way. And so I would assume that the cap is going to either go way up or it's going to change somehow. So
there's a data cap at Comcast?
Well, they haven't enforced it. They've said they haven't enforced it.
Yeah.
But the answer is yes. I mean, it was 250 gig. And then they went into some markets like Atlanta where they actually started enforcing a 300 and that's gigabytes, you know, so that's different than gigabits per second. excuse me. And so they went into Atlanta, for example, and they were sending notes to people, letters to people saying, hey, you know, we're going to charge you more. We're going to cut you off if you don't throttle what you're using. So.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Well, let's just
Steve, Phil, he's mm-hmm. always pushing those limits, right?
I know.
I am. Well, all I want is I want symmetrical service so I can throw a server in my house. Maybe a rack.
Okay, Hillary.
Yeah. Now, I wouldn't run my own email, but I'd serve up family photos and
there you go.
Videos and stuff like that.
At lightning speed.
Rack in the kitchen. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Little Mac Mini.
Why not? I love that.
So another thing that happened this past week is this whole Mayo Clinic venture into entrepreneurship. And Graham, have you looked through this? Have you examined this?
I hadn't seen that particular article, but I'm certainly aware of the company that it's focused on. Ambient.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, we hope to have them at our upcoming Mini Analytics Life Sciences event, pitching about what they're doing. I was aware of the Mayo Clinic incubator. And this guy Xavier, whom I've met, and apparently Ambient is located in this small facility. Although it did double in its size, it's I don't know what it is, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 square feet maybe. There's a lot going on down in Mayo. We've got a couple of startups from there that started there anyway that we hope to have talking about healthcare analytics, which is what Ambient is all about. Things are going on. Does this article get into the Techstars program? They had a kind of a cooperative thing with Techstars.
No, they don't, but they do. Yeah, they do talk about the Rochester area economic development thing. But mm-hmm. Mayo Medical Ventures was the first VC oriented group that they had, and if you remember. Back in the day, in the 90s, when they funded to the tune of $10 million to the CD-based product. God, I just Ron Buck was the CEO.
What was that called?
It was the Mayo. It was some Mayo book.
Oh yeah. Yeah, the Mayo Clinic Health book, whatever that was called,
was based
on that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And so, they really coughed up some dough on that, and that didn't go. I mean, we IVI Publishing was the name of the company. That's what it
there
was.
There you
called.
Go.
And yep. They really, really put forth a lot of dough and a lot of hope that they were really going to be in the information publishing business, and it didn't really fly, but. At that time, that's when I began to learn about some of the other things that Mayo Medical Ventures was doing, like radiology startup in Milwaukee that had a great technology. And so they've been doing this for a very long time. It's just that they're formalizing it more now, and they're doing joint ventures, which I mm-hmm. think is potentially new for them.
But. Yeah, they have such a huge portfolio of technologies that they're interested in commercializing. They really haven't done a lot of that lately that we hear about, though. There's not a lot of news coming out of Mayo Medical Ventures that I ever see. I see that another one of the companies and I guess they're still in the accelerator incubator down there, is Evidentia Health. That apparently got an early investment from Mayo Clinic Ventures, but I also heard they're not really all that active in Rochester anymore and maybe more focused up here because they are a joint venture with the University of Minnesota Physicians. So, I don't know. I've been to Mayo Clinic Ventures, Mayo Medical Ventures, I guess was the correct name, or at least it was, and saw them present on their technology portfolio, and it was with Barb Stinnett, and it's amazing the amount of technology they have down there, but as far as the number of companies they've spun out, it's not a big number at this point.
Yeah, and, right.
I don't know why, but I think they want to do more. But, you know, it's such a unique ecosystem down there. I mean, they're kind of private and quiet about what they're doing. But there are some good things coming out, and hopefully we'll hear from a couple of these, both Evidentia and Ambient Clinical Analytics at our Mini Analytics Life Science event on October 23rd.
Great. Well, I just want to touch on this before we bring on our guest. And we're time's running out here before we can get him on. And but I just wanted to ask you, Phil, if you have used this new app from the city of Minneapolis.
Yeah, I remember the RFP went out for that.
Minneapolis parking app.
Yeah, and that I remember we talked about it at when we were HyperIQ at the time, to talking about putting something that together. It was a very complex RFP because it was not just an app. It was, you know, the tracking and the banking and all of that sort of stuff. And, you know, for us at that time was just way, you know, we had so much going on. There was no way we could do that. So, but I did notice this, and I was curious to see that, I don't know, it doesn't sound like a good deal to me. You know, you've got to pay 10 to 25 cents additional to use the app, for parking. I mean, these are meters that also take credit cards. So it's still seems to me credit cards are still the better idea, but.
Here's why I got excited about this. And so for everyone listening, what it is, it's an app from the city of Minneapolis, and it's a pilot test right now about being able to not only pay at the meter, pay at the pay slot on the street, but also be notified when it's going to run out, and you can then repay or add more time to your parking. And if you want a preferred membership to lower your transaction costs, it's 99 cents a month. Right. And then your transaction cost is only 15 cents. Otherwise, it's a quarter. Mm-hmm. And so to your point, that's an issue. But I can't tell you how many times I've parked on the street and I'm at a client or we're at a restaurant or something. And, you know, I set my own timer and give myself a 10-minute head start to get back to, you know, pump the meter and add to it. And I will tell you that in the last couple months, I've probably done that 4 or 5 times where I've had to get up, go out and add more time to the parking. And that'd be worth a quarter to me to do that.
I have to do it at Coco Grain Exchange all the time too. So
good point. Yeah.
It's an interesting setup. Now I couldn't find where I saw this in relation to that particular announcement, because I was looking at some of the articles announcing it, but the actual transaction fee that they say 10 to 25 cents, it sounds like it's more like 25 cents. Actually goes to the developer. So it's a sort of a pay for play sort of thing with this parking meter app company. So, which is kind of interesting. It's a good deal for the city. They don't really make it in an investment, and they, you know, they still get their take and make it more convenient for users. And they kind of leave it to the app company to gamble.
And who is that? Who is the developer? Do we know?
Yeah. I can do some digging. Why don't you introduce
our guest? I'll introduce our guest. So our guest is a guy who has been around a long time, sold his company to Code 42, and he's now working there. And he has been involved in co-founding Mobile March with our own Phil Wilson, and also IoT Fuse, the Internet of Things conference that I've been involved in with him. And soon he'll have one about stopping athlete's foot, new conference with Graham Thickens.
Very nice.
no, I'm kidding. Anyway.
He does sell credit on many analytics events, so bless his
heart.
He's great.
He's a great guy. A lot of stuff. Yeah. And so he's involved in something called IoT Hack Day about the Internet of Things. And it's going to be on October 17th, and he's going to be on to chat, tell us about what it is and what the focus is and the mission, and then, just talk about it, the event. So let's add Justin Grammons.
All right, let's do that. Hi, Justin.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Can you hear me?
Well, yeah. Beautifully, yeah.
Perfect. Sounds yeah, great.
You sound like a podcaster. You're so clear.
I don't know.
Long time no here. Talk. Long time yeah. no talk. How are you, bud?
Good. I'm doing
How's
good.
How's the family? You guys been to the fair yet? You making the trip to the fair with the boys?
We will. We'll be going next week, Wednesday. So just in time for it to get nice and hot and steamy yeah, there.
Exactly.
The way the fair is meant to be enjoyed, right?
That's right. That's right. Just bring a towel. Hang it off your belt.
Towel off.
Yeah. Well, we kind of set up, you and a little bit about that you're doing IoT Hack Day, but why don't you tell us what it is and the focus and what you're expecting for outcome and so on.
Sure. Cool. Well, this is the second year we've done it. Last year, so that's, I guess that is one, I have one thing to base it on with regards to turnout and stuff like that. But I guess our official tagline is, it's a fun, free day, kind of brings together teams and novel ideas and kind of adds an entrepreneurial spirit to dream up and build cool devices to solve everyday problems. So all of that is to say, I guess, that, we're looking for a bunch of people to come together and build some really cool stuff with regards to the Internet of Things. IoT is such a broad term. So, some of the stuff that people built last year were, not quote unquote on the internet per se, but they were kind of Bluetooth enabled type things. There were people that did this thing called Foggles, which was more of a virtual reality type goggles. So we're really open to all types of, I guess, new technology ideas and stuff like that for teams to come in and build. And the whole purpose of it is kind of like I said, we want to create new kind of entrepreneurial ideas and get a chance to kind of have 12 hours to really focus on something that maybe you've been wanting to do. It's so hard with, life and work and all that sort of stuff to try and hack away in your basement or do stuff an hour here or an hour there. And this kind of came out of a passion of mine too as well. Like, why can't we just put together 12 hours where, you can just stay focused and just try and see what you can build in 12 hours and have some fun at it.
And it's not just for kids, obviously. I mean, this is really right?
Yeah. No. It's not for kids. And in fact, we have a kind of a kid component that I can speak to that too as well. Last year we had 10 teams. Each team had roughly 4 or 5 people on it. So we had about 50 people competing. And it was all it was all adults that were working on their ideas.
So I was wondering about, because I didn't go last year, but I was wondering about what it was like for the teams, because obviously they're competing in some respect, but was there a lot of connection and knowledge sharing and, hey, oh, by the way, have you tried this? I mean, was there lots of discussion about, different tools and different approaches and stuff like that? Or was everybody just pretty much heads down building whatever they were building?
Yeah, no, it was a huge sort of like collaborative thing. We encouraged teams to kind of help each other out. I know some teams needed, oh, geez, I forgot some batteries. Oh, here's some batteries. Oh, I forgot some solder. Okay, cool. Here's some solder. Oh, do you have these components? Yeah, I got them. So, yeah, we like we did last year, the teams will be all competing in the same space in kind of the same room in tables that are set up in close proximity to each other. So, yeah, there was definitely a lot of collaborative effort and kind of like this whole mission of building better technology in Minnesota. I mean, that was another sort of thing that I know of a bunch of different little projects people are working on here or there, but they don't really get the exposure that I think that they deserve. And so part of this event is to kind of, you get more exposure in masses. So the more people you can get together, hopefully the more amount of exposure you can get and the more interest you can get in the local technology community doing it together.
Sure. How many folks can they handle at Minitronics is kind of an interesting company that's hosting it, more in the medical device space over in Energy Park. But how many folks can you accommodate?
Yeah. So last year we had this big warehouse in the back. It was awesome. We probably could have accommodated well over 100 people competing. Mm. This year, as the company has been growing, they actually have taken over that warehouse space last year. So if anybody has attended last year and maybe is listening to this, we aren't going to be in that space, but they have another building next door to there and they have this training center there. And I'm figuring we can still probably put, at least 80 to 90 people competing in that space. So we're trying to limit it in some way, just with regards to getting people to sign up sooner rather than later. Because what happens, you know, everybody's kind of a procrastinator, so they want to sign up at the last minute. And so, you know, we do have, I do have this idea of having, you know, probably 15 teams maximum competing in this, just so we don't just leave it wide open and people are kind of coming in at the end. But yeah, I'm figuring, you know, we'll be able to handle at least about 100 people or so there.
Well, you know, it's
is there.
Oh, go.
I was going to say, is there any cost involved?
No, no, it's completely free. And as we did last year, you know, for attending, we will feed you for the day. So we have breakfast, lunch, and dinner that is supplied to everybody who competes. We were able to do T-shirts last year too, as well. And then the winners will receive, you know, prizes from various companies that I'm kind of like lining up from here on town. But it'll all be, you know, there will be no cash awarded. It will all just be, you know, product. Gadgets. So last year we gave away stuff. Yeah. Last year we gave away stuff from SmartThings. We gave away stuff from, you know, what was Spark, now it's Particle. NimbleLink gave away one of their modems. So a bunch of little stuff like that.
Well, you know what, cool. You know what I think about when I think about stuff like this, that, I mean, you think about IoT Hack Day is just remembering the story about Steve Wozniak going to the Homebrew Computer Club out in the Bay Area in the 70s and having him say, after my first meeting, I started designing the computer that would later be known as the Apple I. It was that inspiring. And so you think about who's going to get inspired,
right?
You know, and that's the magic that can happen at these events is you just never know that some kid that's maybe over in the corner or maybe hanging out with his dad or mom, all of a sudden, you know, just all the ducks line up and in his head and they're off and running, you know? I mean,
people meet each other that they otherwise would never meet.
Right.
You know, so.
Right.
Yep. It's great.
So that's actually a good launching point into the other thing that I was going to talk about. So, you know, we have the hack day going on that goes on from, you know, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. So we'll have people hacking for 12 hours. But last year I was approached by a guy named Dan McCreary, who is kind of he attends a lot of the IoT events and works a lot with Arduino and kids and stuff like that. And he's like, hey, I got this idea. You know, would it be cool if I could like take one of the conference rooms at Minitronics and basically set up a kind of a kid coder day during the event? And I was like, that sounds awesome. So it wasn't really well publicized, but I put out information about it and some of the parents brought their kids. And, you know, I think Phil, you were there last year, but yes. It was, you know, it was a very sort of like touching moment. I think at the end when kids were able to come up and show stuff that they had built over the course of the day. And it works out well that it's in October because kids can start working on Halloween costumes. And, Dan's big focus is, you know, he can do a lot of really interesting stuff with LEDs. And so this year, we decided to actually kind of promote that a little bit more, and we're calling it our LED costumes event, and it's going on at Minitronics, and it's going on at Minitronics. It's during the day. On our website at iothackday.mn, there is a section there where you can sign up for the LED costume stuff. It's just a little bit below, you know, our main information there on the homepage. There is a cost for that. That's $20, mainly because, you know, your kid will actually get an Arduino board. You will get LED, you know, lights. You will get a bunch of components and all that sort of stuff. So you will leave with this stuff. Whatever you end up building that day, you will end up, taking it home. And Dan's going to kind of work with the kids throughout the entire day, helping them out, trying to build stuff around LED costumes.
That's fabulous.
Very cool.
Absolutely.
I think Jim Elliott's going to want to register for that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he's been talking about having glowing underwear for a long time, so that'll be.
Well, yeah, we did do the podcast from there live last year, and that was a lot of fun. I know you guys stayed in the safety of your underwear at home, but yeah, that was really a great event, and it was great to see everybody there. And I think that what was really so impressive was how many people came out for the presentations at the end of the day. And again, yeah, Justin's right. You know, having the kids be part of all of that. I mean, it had to really hopefully inspire them to really explore, you know, more in the tech space, but it is really a great event. And I love the demos at the end. They were just fabulous. So this is a wonderful event. I'm glad it's at the same place. And I'm looking forward to it. I think, you know, maybe I could get these guys to get up early and come down, Justin, because it was great.
Yeah. I'm coming for sure.
You are?
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, wow. Wow, you got Steve out of his cocoon early on a Saturday morning. That's pretty good, Justin.
Well, and if I'm in town, I'll be happy to join you guys too.
See, there we go. We've already got
awesome.
A
there you go.
We got a quorum here. So yeah,
I need a costume.
What was the other thing? Well, we are looking for additional sponsors too as well. So, you know, Minitronics has been great, stepped up to host the space for us for literally nothing. Actually, they've opened their doors and are going to allow, you know, people to come in. But I will just have to plug in a little bit of a sponsorship thing there. Yeah, we're approaching a bunch of the other sponsors from last year. But, you know, we're hoping to make it bigger and just a lot more cool things going on there too as well. So,
and how do they contact you for sponsorship?
They could just, they could contact me. They could go to the website, iothackday.mn. There's contact information there. But then also Justin at iothackday.mn.
Great.
So just shoot me off an email. That would be great.
Outstanding. Right. Well, yeah, what else has been going on with you? I know you're doing a lot of the IoT stuff. Any word on a new IoT fuse, you guys? Any discussion as to when that might happen again? So that was another great IoT event.
Yeah, that was fun. We're still in sort of the early, you know, thought process, but yeah, I think the intention is to again have it this spring. We're
nice.
Looking at the University of Minnesota as one option, but you know, always looking to kind of grow it and see if there's other venues and stuff that might be a better fit too as well.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool.
We may do it at the White House, but then we'll have to figure out how to get everybody out to DC.
And
I'm kidding.
Justin, are you're also doing the what is it? IoT this week or is that what you're, I can't remember the name of it. I apologize, Justin.
No.
The news. Yeah.
Yeah. It's IoT Weekly News.
That's it.
So the website is iotweeklynews.com. So publish stuff every week on kind of what the current trends are going on around IoT. So that's been fun. And then I've been, you know, speaking at various other events. So if people are interested in kind of wanting to know kind of how IoT can kind of work into their, either their product or their business. What are some of the growth potential, some of the areas and stuff like that. Just probably a month or so ago, I spoke at the Inventors Network. So a bunch of inventors have ideas and trying to, you know, kind of how can we bring some technology maybe into some of those ideas, you know, some of the electronics and sort of IoT type stuff. So yeah, I've been kind of just trying to get the word out around what the Internet of Things is and just trying to be, you know, kind of a thought leader in that space and just provide information and discussion.
Mission accomplished, my friend. Well done.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely.
Well done.
I was going to say, you know, you guys are a part of that, you know, the fact you guys run this podcast, you guys, you know, talk about technology and the fact you've had me on, I really appreciate it.
Oh, geez. No problem. Yeah. Anytime.
Glad to have Anytime, you on.
Brother.
You're definitely worth a few megabytes worth of MP3.
Very nice, Steve. Well said, I guess.
Yeah, well, isn't that a compliment? Hey, Justin, thanks for being on, pal.
Sure. No problem at all, guys. Appreciate it.
We'll talk soon.
Take care,
buddy. Thanks, Justin.
Yep. Bye. We'll see you later. Bye. Bye-bye.
Love that guy.
Yeah,
Love that guy.
So. He's an active guy, that is for sure.
Yep. Well, unfortunately, there are no other tech stories to talk about this. Oh, no, I guess there are a few.
Oh,
we should probably touch on. So I don't know who put this on here, but the Tesla Model S P85D breaking
that was me.
Consumer Reports rating system. I saw that and I just howled.
Elon Musk is my hero.
It is literally. Well, I bought.
It's like the best car ever made.
I know. And, you know, the thing is, though, is I went out last night on Car Soup and looked for used Teslas.
You're not going to find any used Teslas.
No, there were like 135 used Tesla S's. Most of them were the base model.
Yeah.
But even a three-year-old base model Tesla S was $58,000. It had 35,000 miles on it. And I'm like,
that's a bargain. That's a bargain.
Oh, man. No.
No, not yet.
No. Well, hey,
you don't have to pay for gas. It pays itself back.
I know. But just as an example, a Mercedes E-Class E300 or E350, that's like $62,000. you can buy one for like 38 2 years later.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, so I mean, well, those things are plummeting in value. And
What does that say?
Well, it says that people want electric cars.
Oh, it says that, you know, electric is going to last a lot longer. It's going to hold its value a lot longer. I'm sitting here justifying it. I can't afford one either. So, yeah. But I really found this fascinating because, you know, last year the Tesla Model S was their highest ranking car. I think it like had 98 out of 100. Yeah. And so Consumer Reports, you know, throws out this and it's like, wow. I mean, it's better than any other car ever made ever, period. It's basically what they're saying.
So. Yeah. And their only qualifier in that article was, and it's not perfect in every category, blah, blah, blah. Well, of course not. Yeah.
How could it not be, how can it score 103 and not be perfect?
Well, right? I know.
So, great car.
And you know, what's so funny is that, you know, I've been talking about this for a long time about the irony of Texas, the free marketeers allowing car dealers to lobby the legislature and get Tesla to not be able to open their own stores.
Yeah.
And then Toyota going away from electric toward hydrogen and talking about, you know, gas station infrastructure and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, at the end of the day, it's all about the dealers, because with electric cars, you basically don't have anything to do.
Yeah.
You don't have oil to change and you don't have spark plugs to put in and, you know, maybe you rotate the tires and things like that, but the amount of maintenance that's necessary on a Tesla Model S is nothing.
Yes.
And that's got to freak out car dealers.
Well, you know, it also does point out this discussion that we have on a fairly regular basis on the podcast, which is about, you know, technology that does take jobs. I mean, you know, the advancement of technology costs jobs as well as maybe becoming more convenient, but in the long term, you know, what's the downside of it? However, you know, we live in a world where climate change is an issue, where pollution is an issue, where overcrowding is an issue. These are one of the things that you kind of have to weigh against, you know, whether you want to invest in, you know, more of a future based fuel. And I think that you know, electric is the way to go, but of course, I'm not alone in that, and a lot of people believe that no, that's not the way to go. But like Mercedes,
yeah. Well, so. I'm going to see if I can find an article. Speaking of things that are atypical, I just got done reading this, and of course, I didn't put the link in the show notes, so I'll find it. But it's about a UK battery company that has created a hydrogen powder, for lack of a better term, that'll give an iPhone or any smartphone 2 days worth of charge. Wow. And 2 full days at 100%, and then it starts to wane. And then you can just recharge the powder, and they're doing it now through the headphone port. But they have done a joint venture or an arrangement, an alliance of some kind, with a major U.S. technology company that shall remain nameless because they're not talking about them. But what's interesting about this is another company did a calculation on this hydrogen powder and discovered that 6 gallons of this powder would be, I think it was 110 kilowatts. So it'd be better range on a car than a Tesla Model S P85, and how you could literally drive in and have these batteries, just swap them out, throw in the other ones with hydrogen or redo this hydrogen powder, and you're off and running. And anyway, so the whole point is people are getting excited about this thing being the next gigantic wave of potential with battery recharging, and it could be very interesting. So I'll see if I can find a link, because I probably didn't explain that very well. But
no, that's all right.
Pretty cool stuff. But hey, this is even more exciting. Facebook hit 1 billion users in a single day. Wow. Boy, talk about a data center. Redundancy globally. I mean, I would love to know about Facebook's infrastructure.
Interesting that it was the one day I wasn't on Facebook. I don't know what. I must have missed it. So
Yeah, right, right, right.
I'm proud yeah, I to say I wasn't there.
I wasn't really sure. Yeah, I guess that's a thing, but I guess I don't know. How many times are you going to say, you know, we're massive?
Yeah. Well, it's still pretty impressive. Yeah, it's just that, you know, I don't know. It's just, it's getting annoying. And I'm trying to figure out why. What was really interesting is my wife, who's connected to her family and all these friends and all that kind of stuff. She goes, you know, I basically don't use Facebook anymore. She goes, I'm sick and tired of people ranting about different stuff and, you know, religion and politics and all that. I don't want to see that. And it's like, oh, yeah. Okay. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. There is a backlash. The article that I love was by Richie Jennings at Computer World. And it was, he had a billion sheeple on Facebook Monday. Presumably the other 85% of the world got a life.
That's good.
Yeah.
I like
now,
that.
Now. Don't be bitter.
Yeah.
Don't be bitter.
Yeah. Well, at the big Apple iPhone event is coming Wednesday, September 9th. And there's, but it's not.
I do get a kick out of the Cult of Mac take on this, that it's going to blow up the internet. It's
It'll
like the
blow
biggest
up the
thing
internet.
Since sliced bread. It's like,
well,
oh my God.
Well, they're saying that because they're not going to allow Windows users to view the live cast.
Well, it may break Windows. I don't know if it'll break the internet.
Yeah. Well, but it's not going to be just an iPhone 6 event. It's going to also be the Apple TV event, and who knows what else. They rented out a facility that'll accommodate, 7,500 or 7,700 people?
Sure.
The Bill Graham Arena, and formerly the biggest event they'd ever held was 2,200 people, I think, 2,000 or 2,200. And so this is, they're really going to make hay here. And that's why I put a link in the show notes about worldwide smartphone growth expected to slow to 10.4% in 2015.
Oh, it'll slow to now 10%.
But that's
geez,
down
that's
from
so
27.5% growth.
Well, it's a new technology, for Christ's sake. Of course, it's going to go down, but still 10% growth. Hello.
I know. But the market looks at this and says 54% of Apple's revenues comes from the iPhone. And so if growth globally is slowing in smartphones, does that mean it's also going to slow for them too? Who knows? But one thing they're doing in iOS 9 that's kind of a surprise, welcome or not, I don't know, but Apple
blockers.
Apple's going to be able to, they're going to have blockers built in, content blockers built into Safari, so it won't show ads. And there's great concern about this. And then Google comes out and told developers how to get around these new security rules so they can keep selling ads.
Which I think is brilliant.
Yeah.
Because after all, they do get 95% of their revenue from advertising.
Right.
So.
Really?
Right. They do.
Oh, yeah.
I can't imagine.
But, you know, it isn't just the ad community that's now worried about this. There's a ton of marketing tools out there, you know, marketing automation, marketing tools companies that are starting to sweat it now, too.
Well, of course.
Well, maybe, if you look at it, maybe then Apple's strategy here is to, you know, derive more of its revenue less from hardware and more for access to their devices. So,
well, and as part of this debate, I read probably half a dozen posts around this content blocking thing. And here's what was interesting. This guy had pointed to some stuff on Alexa, some stats on Alexa, and you kind of had to follow this whole comment thread, but the punchline was that Apple is doing this because there's so many people who are on fixed data plans, and 42% of all content loaded on a web page is advertisements. And now with self-running videos to get your attention, or GIFs that are showing up that are, you know, a megabyte a piece, that it's becoming just insane the amount of of data that you have to download just because you want to read an article. And that's mm-hmm. That's probably the biggest part of the pushback on this. And in fact, that's, you know, and I look at this about Google kind of doing an end run around them, but at the same time, Google and Chrome and also Amazon are pushing Flash closer to extinction, according to InfoWorld, because they're Google's going to make it so you have to turn Flash on to be able to use it. And then Amazon is coming out. Of course, this is also on the heels of the Facebook CIO basically saying, you know, Flash has got to die. And and I think that it's we're really close. I've taken it off all our systems in the house. It's off.
Yep. You say don't do the update. Just
take
get
it
rid
off.
Of it.
Just get rid of it. Yep. And so
it's a goner.
But then fortunately, former Apple CEO John Sculley has come out with a new line of smartphones. I think it's just his name, because the guy's 74 years old.
Is his name really associated with success? I mean, I don't know. Who wants to get into, you know, mobile phones? I mean, just Lord Almighty, there's so many of them. How do you differentiate yourself by saying I used to be with Apple? I don't.
Well, and they're going after emerging markets with this device. Yep. And that sounds great, but when you look at especially Blue and is it Huawei? How do you pronounce it?
Huawei.
Huawei, thank you.
Yep.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah. Blue and Huawei. If you look at those two vendors specifically, they're already at these price points and have been for some time.
Right. Right.
And so I don't really see what the huge
because they're good looking
competitive
That's
differentiator
why.
Is. Well, maybe I don't.
That
know.
Was sort of the gist of the whole thing. That they're attractive looking. They're stylish. It's like, yeah, well, if you're in an emerging country, you're really not looking for stylish. You're looking for dirt ass cheap.
Yeah.
So there is to it.
Yeah. Even $129 when you're making $2 a day.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like, hello.
It's like investing in a Tesla car, you know.
Right. Right.
No. Well, anyway, sorry. Jaded media guy coming through again.
Yeah. Well, we have to cut to the chase here, boys. So let's get to the cool thing of the week.
No, wait a minute. Yeah, we do have to talk about the
oh, the bummer of the week.
The bummer.
Oh, yeah,
because this was your cool thing, Graham.
Cool thing of the week.
Neil Young admits.
Which is kind of depressing that Neil Young has admitted that they're having troubles with the Pono player. So, and getting into markets and expanding, and it's really difficult. So it's tough to be in that business. But I still believe that we can all do better than MP3 and AAC and all of these formats that we've got out there that is robbing. Here's my soapbox, robbing the youth of America from the depth of sound that is music. You know, these formats are just killing us. The music sounds like tin, you know, coming playing off of tin foil, and it just I got to think we can do better.
Well, so my brother-in-law, who owns Audio by Design, they do installations and, you know, high end homes and so on. And so we're over for Thanksgiving dinner, and he says, "Hey, come on, look at this new turntable." And he's showing me this turntable. I forget who the vendor was.
A what?
Yeah. Well, he's got a ton of vinyl, but so he's showing me this thing, and he says, yeah, and it's this and it's that, and it does this and it's that, and it's a $3,500 turntable.
Oh.
And I said, well, that's really great. And he said, but listen to this. And he put on I'm trying to remember that it's a.
Some 80s music?
No, it was a George Winston album. Well,
sorry.
Piano music. Well, because his wife loves it. But anyway, the sound, it's like I had never heard it before. If I shut my eyes, it was literally like his piano was in the room. It was unbelievable.
You see, those were the good old days. Those were the days that's the way music sounded. And we built the MP3 technology, and, you know, the fact of the matter is it was designed for, you know, small pipe internet transfer. So it was always very condensed and very small amount of data that was actually being pushed out. you know, we're better than that now. We have wider, you know, bigger pipes. We have fiber. We have other waves of delivering, you know, that, you know, come on, we got to up our game here. Yeah. And even wave, which everybody sort of harkens back to, well, you could always do a wave file. It's like, yeah, it's still not the same. It's just still not the same. Right. And to me, there's got to be something that is, you know, between a needle in a groove and what we have now in MP3, there's got to be something better in there somewhere. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And, you know, Neil Young's company claims they have something, and you know the article isn't all that negative when you read it.
No,
he's trying to raise more money. They've Good. Shipped a lot of them, but they want to ship a whole lot more. But I found it interesting that he's trying to raise money. I mean, you tend to think he has all the money in the world, and he'd plowing his own money into it. But you know, it takes more than that, I guess.
Record companies have all his money, so.
Well, you know, there you go.
You got a Pono, didn't you, Graham?
No, remember, maybe you weren't on the show when I was asked that. I never did get it because the PR people never got back to me, and I thought, well, the hell with them then.
Okay.
You know, so no, I never did pull the trigger on that because I was trying to get, you know, like to the head of the line as a reviewer, and they never even answered me. You know, this was after I'd seen them at CES, you know, and visited in the booth with the VP of marketing. Neil wasn't there, but, you know, I listened to it and it sounded damn good to me, you know, and I thought, yeah, okay. And like Tim has said, you know, we were paying more for iPods back in the day than this thing cost, or at least as much. So, you know, it's not that expensive.
Right.
But no, I never did actually get there. I got distracted, you know, another shiny object.
Look, a squirrel.
My attention. You know how it goes.
Yep. Okay, so let's move on from the bummer of the week to the cool thing of the week. Cool thing of the week. Steve.
Mine is the Twist World Charging Station. And what's cool about it is that, A, you have four USB ports in it, so you can charge four devices.
Right.
You know, phones and cameras and all that kind of stuff. But it also has a thing that pops out, and then you can put on the various adapters. And the adapters come right inside the unit. So you just basically twist the thing, and out pops the connectors. It is fabulous. My wife looked at this because she travels, you know, 120, 30,000 miles a year. And she looked at this and went, I want one now. Because the power is compatible in 150 countries and the thing's $40. And plus you can get it for $5 less at Stack Social for $34.99. But anyway, so that's my cool thing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And there's a version that has the actual, MacBook adapter on it.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
Pretty cool, eh?
Well, it's a cool thing, baby.
Graham?
Yeah, well, my cool thing of the week is Instagram's change. You know, if it wasn't for Instagram, I wouldn't be using the Facebook platform much at all. Of course, Instagram is really its own thing. You know, they're owned by Facebook, but I use Instagram a lot, and it has finally made it so we don't have to post only square format photos, which is something I've been struggling with for a long time. I mean, I tend to shoot a lot of my photos square now just because, okay, if I want to put this on Instagram, I better compose it to fit square. Well, there are way, way too many shots I want to take that are portrait or landscape. And, you know, I have never liked being forced into square.
Me too.
You know, well, they wrote in their post that, you know, we've always been about square format, but that said, the visual story you're trying to tell should always come first. And we want to make it simple and fun for you to share moments just the way you want to. Well, hooray, hooray. I'm all for that. So that's what I'll be doing. I'll be taking advantage of that change for sure. So that's my cool thing.
Very nice.
Phil?
I went big. I say go big or go home.
I almost had this as my cool thing, so go ahead.
The drone killing laser cannon.
Remember, boys, we've talked about these drones, putting weapons on the drones, but this is the opposite.
Yeah, now we're shooting them down because it's like this was created by Boeing to basically bring down drones with laser technology. If you check out the link, you can see a little video of how they demonstrated it. Basically shoots a beam of light in less than 2 seconds, burns through the drone and basically cripples it and brings it down. It doesn't blow it up or anything like that, but it is it tracks these suckers and takes them down. So I thought that was very cool. I'm not necessarily saying I'm a fan. Imagine if you miss. But it is kind of cool.
You know, this is similar to the cool thing I almost did was the new shotgun shell for shooting down drones.
No, I didn't see that.
Remember that guy in Kentucky that got arrested?
Yes, yes.
For coming out with his shotgun and shooting one down? Well, sure enough, some ammunition company has come out with a specially designed shotgun shell.
I think that's interesting.
Crazy.
Well, let's just finish up real quick with some upcoming events. I put a whole bunch of them in here. Including right. One that I thought was kind of fun was Jedi tryouts with Remo. Remo is the gesture-based interface technology, so that you can make movements and gestures and control your technology.
Yep.
And so it's really cool. And so they're going to have Jedi tryouts. So you can actually go there on Tuesday, September 8th, and try it out. And see what you think.
I think this is a great marketing angle. So
do I. Because
you can control things like a Jedi. So they've done this whole Jedi tryout.
I know.
Think that's brilliant. Yeah, I do think that's brilliant. Of course, Startup Week comes up the 8th of September. Yeah. Lots of events going on there. And I'm really interested in this Women in Technology at Tech Cities conversation. That should be interesting on the 9th of September.
Yep. And then Minnesota Cup Pitch Fest, September 11th. There's a lot going on around the 11th.
Yes.
Social media breakfast and so forth. Minnesota Venture Conference is coming up, the Open Source North Conference. And so I'd encourage people just to go through this and look at the upcoming events, because there's a lot of stuff going on.
There really is.
And of course,
it's the season.
About Justin's IoT Hack Day on the 17th of October.
That's right. That's right.
So, all right. So we'll be busy in the next few weeks. And of course, we'll talk about it next week on
the Minovate Gang podcast.
Ah, yes, we will.
Take care.
Come on back next week, y'all.